Welcome to the Current Federal Tax Developments for the week of November the 12th, 2018. Current Federal Tax Developments is brought to you by Kaplan Professional Education and your State Society of CPAs. This week, I'm coming to you from yet another hotel, this time in downtown Minneapolis, Minnesota. Tomorrow, I'll be speaking at the Minnesota Society of CPAs annual tax conference here at the Minneapolis Convention Center. I'll be here on day one of the conference, or it's a two-day conference. I'll be down here with a bunch of other speakers. We got a whole bunch of us coming down here to do this. It's one of the largest conferences in the nation, run by a state CPA society. So it's always an interesting thing to come down here and do things. I'll be doing sessions tomorrow on a number of topics, mainly related to the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, other than 199 Cap A. So I'll be doing a few things on that. And if you happen to listen to this early, and you're going to be at the convention, well, yeah, come by and see me while I'm at the various presentations. Otherwise, sorry I missed you at that if you listen to this later. This week, we've got a few things happening here. First thing we've got is we're going to talk about some, you know, there is a promise. We are actually going to get proposed regulations on the interest deduction limitations under the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act for businesses. The IRS got out the first real set of final regulations, though it's on something that maybe you're not so thrilled we're going to have final regulations on, or the Congress made a change. We'll talk about a tax court case, or actually a court of appeals case that dealt with an appeal of a tax court decision, where the Circuit Court of Appeals agreed with the tax court that a country singer did not operate a nightclub for a profit motive and therefore disallowed the deduction. We'll also talk about a failure of a taxpayer who attempted to claim a foreign earned income tax credit, or foreign earned income, I should say, deduction, when he tried to claim it because he could not show that his abode was outside the United States. Well, as I said, we'll get started with this week. And I'm going to start with the promise that's found in an article written by interest deduction regs just days away. Then tax notes today to be published on November the 12th. It shows up actually if you subscribe to Tax Notes Today online on Saturday. So it, you know, we could look at it on the 10th of November, but obviously the official publication date's the 12th. Emily was quoting a presentation made by Lafayette Chip Harder III, which was a Treasury Deputy Assistant Secretary for International Tax Affairs. He was speaking at the Federal Tax Conference sponsored by the University of Chicago Law School last Friday. And he was talking about the issue dealing with the regulations under Section 163J of the Internal Revenue Code. Now, 163J used to deal with foreign tax internet. 63J limits the amount of deduction that a business can claim. The purpose of the rule was to keep people from borrowing heavily to get their business running. Now, again, it does not apply to a taxpayer who's below $25 million of revenue. But if you're above $25 million of revenue, it can become a fairly nasty limitation. You can have no more than 30% initially of earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, amortization, but depletion. But that changes in a couple of years where it's just earnings before interest and taxes. Any amount in excess of that 30% is carried forward to following years. Obviously, the problem is if you're over 30% this year, good chance you'll be over 30% next year. Also, interest rates are rising, so it's going to become tougher to get out from under that particular rule. Well, the IRS needs to issue some regulations in this area, and Mr. Harder told us that those regs should be coming out this week, which is actually good news if you have to deal with it. So he said within the next few days, sometime the week here of November the 12th, we should be seeing these regulations. It's about 500 pages of regulations that will be involved in this particular structure. Thanksgiving. Looks like they may slip on that somewhat, but this was going to be the biggest chunk of those regulations. If you have a client who is highly leveraged and they have revenues in excess of $25 million, you want to take a look at these rules. These rules caused a lot of problems. The Wall Street Journal had an article when this came out dealing with the problems this caused for Dell Computer, because Dell had gone out and borrowed heavily, both to go private and to make a major acquisition. And quite honestly, of course, they ended up with now a lot of interest that would be non-deductible, which caused them to have to take some steps to try to reduce that. various things end up happening. Not a lot of fun. What he also told us this week, though, was that regulations on BEAT and the foreign tax credit, the BEAT tax and the foreign tax credit, those probably won't get on the IRS website till after Thanksgiving now. So they're going to be part of that 1,000 pages. So half of the 1,000 pages will come out this week, or I should say, or they're supposed to come out this week. We'll keep our fingers crossed. The other half will come out next week. I think for a lot of us, probably, now again, the BEAT, it's a big deal, but probably not, as one individual that was speaking at the Oregon Tax Conference mentioned last week, that, you know, it's not really something that affects most of our clients directly, but you know, a lot of talk goes on about it. But you're also talking about, but the foreign tax credit, we do now have more buckets for the foreign tax credit, and we're going to get regs on how to divide things up among those buckets. So that could be interesting for some of us. The other catch is, obviously, all these regs are coming out very late in the year. You're going to have, well, a little over a month now, you know, month and a half maybe to deal with the 163J regulations and interest. Obviously, if there are issues with the foreign tax credit, then you're going to be dealing with less than a month. Any other regulations, you know, proposed regs, it'll be out before the end of the year. We still are told that we are expecting the final regs on 199 Cap A by the end of the year. I hope that is the case. But again, you know, things slip. Things may not come out quickly, but we'll cross our fingers, because there obviously are some things we'd like to have guidance on. As I've told people when I spoke in Portland, as I'll tell people tomorrow here in Minnesota, like it or not, there's going to be a lot of unanswered questions when you go to do returns this year. If you can't deal with that uncertainty, you're in the wrong business. You have to be able to deal with that. If you do not, if you have not getting out good old form A275, largely because it's going to be difficult to feel comfortable that any position you take has substantial authority, that there even is a substantial authority position, because in a lot of cases, we simply aren't going to have much guidance whatsoever. Also, sometimes it doesn't matter. There's not even a safe choice. If you want to just, you know, kind of wimp out and say, well, I'll try to make a choice that will ensure that the client could know tax. Whether a rental is a trade or business, well, you know, that answer is okay. Maybe you say it is a trade or business. You're going to take the 20% deduction. Flip side of that is if you say it's not a trade or business, then your problem there is going to be is you're not reducing the 20% deduction under 199 Cap A by that loss coming through. So yeah, uncertainty is the name of the game this year. You just have to deal with it when you're going to be doing tax returns this year. One thing that unfortunately is not uncertain is the IRS released this week Treasury Decision 9842, released on November the 7th, 2018, the final regulations on the due diligence by the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. What these regulations do is they essentially changes that the IRS had put out earlier regarding 6695G's changes under the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. Officially, the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act just changed one thing. It added the head of household status to these rules. Now, these are, as we'll discuss here in just a second, the due diligence rules for when you prepare a return. So we need to do that, you know, do these due diligence steps. If you don't do it, you've got a problem. But one other thing, because they expanded greatly the number of people who could qualify for the child tax credit, because the phase out levels got bumped up significantly for the child tax credit. A married couple, we don't start phasing out to $400,000 of adjusted gross income. You're going to have a lot more child tax credit. Last year was a credit that triggered due diligence, but again, if it was all phased out, it didn't matter. Now suddenly it matters. So what are these rules? Well, Treasury Decision 9842 deals with these, you know, rules under 6695G. These rules started life a number of years ago as rules that dealt with due diligence if your clients claim the earned income credit, right? Remember, anti-earned income credit abuse. Congress was upset that people were claiming that who had no right to. Preparers were out there creating perfect returns that had exactly the amount of earned income that would maximize the earned income credit because it would leave deductions off. They would invent self-employment income and do all kinds of neat things. So Congress was upset about that, imposed these rules. Under these rules, if you had a return you had to basically make certain inquiries of the client to assure that they were qualified to claim the earned income credit. Then secondly, you had to make sure that you documented that. It had to be documented in your file. If that was not the case, if you did not document what you did or you just simply never asked, then the penalty was $500 per return for each return that you had not properly followed the tax credit on the return. Form document that you have obtained. Take a look at Form 8867. All of our tax software, whenever we prepare a return, and if the earned income credit pops up on it, that doesn't happen too much with my clients, but like the child tax credit popped up more often, this year it's going to pop up a lot more often. You have the American Opportunity Tax Credit pop up on the return, or you have somebody claim ahead of the additional child tax credit also gets into that mix. Particular rule. The 8867 has now been expanded to cover all of those. And remember, of all of those, the earned, you know, the head of household status, that doesn't phase out as income goes up. Somebody could have $3 million of AGI. They're still, if they're head of household, they're still going to claim head of household status. And now you're going to need to have the documentation on that. You have to document, in essence, all information necessary to have eligibility to claim the credit or the status. So I need to know, for instance, for head of household, was that child the dependent of the taxpayer? Did the taxpayer provide over half the support for the child, right? Was the taxpayer, you know, did the taxpayer provide over half the cost of the household? That is separate and apart from whether the taxpayer can claim the child's a dependent. So you have to take a look at that rule and make inquiries, document these things. Documenting it means explaining to the taxpayer what the issues are, right, over half the cost of a household, and then asking the clients, yes or no, did you actually meet that requirement? So we have to pick all of those things up. It does not matter on exam if, in fact, the taxpayer ends up being deemed to be qualified to do this. If you lack the documentation, penalty, you know, adds up pretty quickly. Because again, that it didn't get documented on all of your other returns, potentially a major problem. So you have to be really gone after. You know, taxpayers, maybe preparers that prepared a number of earned income credit, because this is what we've been doing the longest, they would pull those returns, even if it turned out that they didn't disallow any of the claim credits, if the preparer had not documented properly in their files and maintained the documentation required by 6695G, the IRS is proposing the $500+ penalty. The penalty is adjusted for inflation every year. Right now, the penalty for 2018 is $520 per return. So it will add up fast if you end up having to worry about that. The IRS, in these proposed regs, what's interesting is a couple of responses they made to comments they received. One commentator suggested that, well, you know, your regs say that we have to have this written documentation. However, you know, they said we should be able to show, even if we don't, you know, we failed to get the written documentation, we failed to write it down. But if we could credibly testify that we had actually asked the client for that information, perhaps even have the taxpayer, you know, sign an affidavit that in fact, yes, they had been asked about that information, Really? Is it really, 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 you know, should you be requiring it to be written and in our work papers? The IRS responded to that by saying that, yes, it's important. The IRS believes it is documentation of the qualification for a taxpayer to compliance. So the IRS specifically declined to remove the requirement regarding how you came up with this answer. That's somewhat crucial. And what you have to document, because this also came up, they talked about a taxpayer who came in, you know, has her niece and nephew, for that purpose. And so she wants to claim head of household status and she wants to get an earned income credit. And a commentator suggested, because we've got an example of that sort in the proposed regs, said, you know, well, we really shouldn't have to get more information. She never lied to us, right? You know, the client didn't lie to us. So, and I have no reason to believe my client's lying. So, you know, what's the problem? The IRS said, here's the problem. It's not just whether or not you had got an incorrect answer or one that you believe the client's lying about. You have to worry about not having all information necessary. The responses must be complete. And the way the regs look at complete is the client has to give you all information necessary to make the proper call. So we're not just looking at when the client lies to you or when you think document that the client was asked about all relevant details to qualify for the benefit in question. If you don't document that, we've got a problem. Now, the IRS said in response to the comment, though, they said, because the commentator was suggesting, well, where do we stop? How far do I have to go? I don't know. The IRS said, well, here's the standard we're going to put in. If a, you know, competent tax preparer, you know, at what you had obtained, the situation under which you had changed, the way it had been obtained, if that person would have concerns that are incorrect, then you have to continue and get more information until you can resolve the matter. So the information we have now, you know, we have complete, consistent, and correct information that we can work from, even if that contradicts the taxpayer's own statements to us. In essence, we've got to do that. It's a judgment call based on what you know. For instance, obvious case that we'll get into, a few years ago, there was a move against a taxpayer from OPR, a tax preparer, where the preparer had prepared a corporate income tax return and individual income tax return. The individuals had been 100% owners of the corporation. The corporation on the 1120 suggested that they had paid $250,000 in salary to the owner, right? You know, you put that on the 1120, right? Remember that? So we have that information there. Calendar 1120 reported that's $250,000 of salary. However, the CPA did the same, and it was a CPA, did the same tax, did the owner's personal return. On the owner's personal return, they filled in the organizer and said they had only received $25,000 in salary. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that is a problem. That's inconsistent information. And maybe there's an answer to it. Maybe, in fact, $225,000 of the amount that was on the corporate return was actually paid after the end of the year. You know, it was paid after the end of the year, but was accrued. Now we get to the problem that probably then in 267, it couldn't have been deducted on the corporate return. But let's ignore that. Let's assume that somehow, you know, we had like five shareholders all below 50%, so that we could theoretically accrue it on the corporate return, but it wouldn't show up on the 1040. Okay, maybe that's true, but $25,000 versus $250,000, you definitely have to make further inquiries in that case. So again, if the information is incomplete, inconsistent, or incorrect, you have reason to believe it is that, you have to follow up. I would note that incorrect or inconsistency could also be, which really causes a hassle, if you're doing the taxpayer or tax return of some other party that's related somehow in this realm to this person. If that person is claiming a set of facts that's different from what that inconsistency. So you have to watch and be careful as to what you've been told by all the parties you're working with. For instance, I would strongly recommend against doing it, But if you had a, if you were doing the tax returns for a two taxpayers who had previously been married, they have a child, and taxpayer A says that, you know, the child lived with him or her more nights during the year, and they had not released the pendency exemption, and the other taxpayer claims the same thing, that's inconsistency. Somebody's not quite got this right. Only one of them could be right. The catch there is figuring out how you can deal with that inconsistency without violating your requirement to keep things. It's been tax season, though, is have you updated your checklist and other guidance? Does your staff know about this rule? You know, be careful. Our tax software does something dangerous, and I think every package does it. It automatically says, yes, we asked about this. Yes, we have documentation to back it up. Yes, yes, yes. That's in the tax return that's being sent to the IRS. You're signing on that. If that is not what's actually happening, if that's not true, there are no work papers in your file to back this up, you got some major problems. People in your firm have to understand the significance of the due diligence rules, and that now they're going to happen a lot more often. We're going to see a lot more of these over the next few years. Why? Because Congress feels it works. That's a way of getting, you know, getting people not to file false claims and put some brakes on the unscrupulous preparers. If there is, at least we can penalize them by forcing them to be liable if they actually claim these credits or, you know, claim these benefits when the taxpayer is not allowed to do so. And they do so without, you know, being able to document that the taxpayer lied to. Either the taxpayer lied to you if they're disallowed, or you fouled up and didn't get the data. So, you know, we're trying to figure out somebody's to blame and somebody's to be penalized. That's kind of the way this works. We got a couple of cases this week. And by the way, not a whole lot's happening in the tax world. I'll be honest, it's been very quiet in the tax world. That's probably because the IRS is working on regs. Not been really. Court of Appeals. Ford versus Commissioner, case number 18-1524. And that case deals with a former country singer who operated a nightclub. Now, this nightclub was one that was relatively famous, had been famous for a lot of songwriters, working, their stuff went up there, and they became famous, they became well-known. Now, this singer, she had for a long time operated this club with her former husband. Former, not because she divorced him or he divorced her, but because he died. So sometime after he died, she attempted to reopen the club. So she started doing it again. What she ends up doing in this case is opening up the nightclub and running it. However, she shows substantial losses continuously from operating the nightclub. She never turned a profit. Now, some of the reasons may make sense. First thing is, this club only operated on weekends. Okay, I can understand that. Maybe that's even better because we're not doing weeknights for which we won't get it paid. But the other interesting part was her cover charge was only $5 to come into this. And even more interesting for a nightclub, all she sold were snacks and non-alcoholic beverages. But even though they had a kitchen in this nightclub, I mean, a full kitchen, they had operated it before, apparently when her husband and her had operated it prior to his death, she didn't operate the kitchen. The only thing they served were minor snacks, non-alcoholic beverages, never opened up the bar, never actually started, you know, serving food. So as you might guess, that might make it a little tough to make money operating this nightclub. More than a little tough for her to do it. The tax court found that what she was operating was a hobby. Obviously, she had her own country and Western music. She was in that industry, so it was of interest to her. But she never made any changes to try to curb the club's losses. She kept operating the same way she always did. She didn't worry about it. And she simply wasn't worried about the losses. Part of the reason why she wasn't worried was very simply that she was getting significant income from the trust that had been established at her husband's death. So she didn't worry much about it. She did it. The tax court also claimed that she and her advisors had no expertise in this area. So the tax court found that this was a hobby and disallowed the losses she had claimed. She took the case up to the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals. The Sixth Circuit disagreed with the tax court that she had no expertise. They said, well, she had operated this club with her husband, and while we don't know what she did and what he did when she operated it, still, obviously, she had some experience in the area of some sort. Now, they did agree that her advisors, she didn't go get advisors that had experience in this area. So they agreed that the advisors, you know, didn't know, apparently were not ones with significant expertise. The court also, the Sixth Circuit, found that it still didn't matter, even though maybe she had expertise and maybe that's a slight factor in favor of seeing this as a profit motive. They said, otherwise, no, it doesn't matter. Her losses were huge and significant. She had tried to claim, well, you know, but it's appreciating in value. So the club would be way more valuable. So, you know, don't worry about my losses. You know, we'll get it when we sell it. The Sixth Circuit said, that's not realistic. Your losses are way too big. This doesn't make sense. We think you're doing it for personal pleasure. And the reality is, kind of like all of these, she had substantial other income. The courts don't normally say openly that that's what they test against. But to be totally honest, we're talking about hobby loss rules. That's a crucial issue. In essence, if a taxpayer doesn't need the enterprise to make money, the taxpayer is not going to be bankrupt if they can't make money. That strongly suggests that it may very well just be a hobby they enjoy doing, and they're trying to claim a deduction for paying for their hobby. The court concluded in this case, that's what she was doing. She was running something that just because she was interested in it, wanted to do it, but that she was not seriously trying to make money off of it. Because of that, no federal tax deduction be allowed. Next and finally, let's talk about the case of Leuenberger versus Commissioner, Tax Court Summary Opinion 2018-52. This is the case of a taxpayer who worked for a defense contractor. And he split ties between a U.S. air base and an air base in Afghanistan for doing his work. Now, he claimed the foreign tax credit or foreign earned, not income credit, I should say, exclusion. So he claimed the foreign earned income exclusion of 2555, claimed that to wipe out his income from the foreign country, stating that, you know, he should be able to exclude that. The catch is, and this is something that we've discussed before, a different problem. Section 911D3 provides a special rule that requires a taxpayer in this case, before we can treat, you know, the Afghanistan location in this case as his tax home. Remember, tax home usually is necessarily where you live. But if you're claiming the foreign earned income exclusion and you're not a bona fide resident, you have to show that your abode, you know, where the major place you live is in the foreign country, not in the U.S. If your ties are closer to the U.S. than to the foreign country, we find that you have not shown your abodes outside the U.S. If your abode's not outside the U.S., you cannot claim the foreign income credit. In this case, they found he had closer ties to the U.S. He came back to the U.S. whenever he could. His family lived in the U.S. They did not go and relocate to Afghanistan. Well, you may say, well, of course they did. You know, that was a quasi-war zone. And I'll say, sure, you're correct, but that's a problem with the foreign earned income exclusion. In essence, his connections were still much stronger back to the U.S. So because of that, and his time overseas was, in the words of the court, severely limited and transitory. Under the foreign earned income exclusion, if you are not a bona fide resident, which, by the way, if you're a bona fide resident, your abode probably is in the foreign country. But if you can't meet that requirement and you have to meet the physical presence test, that your abode be not in the U.S. The taxpayer in this case, and we've had this happen a couple times before, was unable to show that because the connections were stronger with the U.S. Because of that, they were basically denied the foreign earned income exclusion. We're into CPE season right now in a big way. The state societies have their courses running. We're going to be doing a lot. I'm doing a lot the next few weeks. I'm doing mainly in-firm courses, although this week I do have 2 4-hour courses in Arizona. One, I'm actually doing a course on auditing and accounting. Talk about the Revenue Recognition Project. They looks at the accounting method issues and problems, both with the new revenue recognition provision under ASC 606, but also with 451B of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. How do we deal with that? How do we make those things work? So we're going to talk about both of those. But hey, do have an A&A course. Also, the following week, I'm going to, the day before Thanksgiving, be talking in Arizona about Section 199 Cap A. That's a major part. We'll talk about other tax-related issues that affects small businesses from Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, but probably at least 5 hours of the day is going to be devoted to dealing with 199 Cap A and the 20% deduction. Following that, I will actually be down in the U.S. Virgin Islands, both on St. Thomas and St. Croix at the end of November. I'll do a day in each location on Tax Cuts and Jobs Act generally. I've got some days coming up in Indianapolis with fringe benefits. I've also got days coming up in Minneapolis again. Minneapolis dates, one of the things I'll be doing there is also that Section 199 Cap A course, talking about how Cap A works and other things that impact small businesses. And then after I finish all that, I come back to Phoenix and we do our current federal tax developments. We in Tucson last week is the impact of the proposed and maybe by that time final regulations under 199 Cap A. So we'll talk about all those little issues. So be sure to check your state society, even if it's the ones I'm doing for those societies, or it's the ones we're going to be doing, the ones that others here working with us at Kaplan are doing for other state societies, or even other presenters. You know, the state societies have tons of very useful and important courses. You should take a look at that. Be sure you consider looking there for your continuing education needs. This has been Current Federal Tax Developments for the week of November the 12th, 2018. I'm Ed Zollars, who are with you every week on this issue. You can catch my regular updates online at www.currentfederaltaxdevelopments.com. I hope to be able to get back to start writing some more there. The road trips have been crazy the last few weeks. I am actually getting back after my day here in Minneapolis, where I present at the tax conference. I actually am getting back to Phoenix for 4 days. I do have presentations most of those days, but I'm actually back in town, and it's a lot easier to write when I'm not moving from airport to airport every night. So hopefully I'll be able to get something done this week. Then I'm off to, you know, then of course we have the week with Thanksgiving. Then I'm off to Virgin Islands. Things get messy, but I'm hoping to get something up and running. If you have any questions or comments, you can send it to me at zollars@currentfederaltaxdevelopments.com. I'm on Twitter. My handle there is at Ed Zollars, and I'll post information there as I find it useful. Extent the subreddit on Reddit, www.reddit.com/r/taxpros. And as I mentioned before, too, I do follow state society discussion groups. I follow specifically discussions on the boards that are sponsored by the Society of CPAs, the Minnesota Society of CPAs, and by the California Society. That last one is open to pretty much any CPA in the country. And so if you have questions, you can post them there, get a lot of responses. Not a bad kind of tool to get used to using. But with that, another week's down. We may probably next week see if there's anything surprising in the 163J regs for that interest deduction. Might have some other things happen too. You never know. But be sure to join us next week for more developments in the areas of current federal tax developments.